Some of you may have paid attention to the very last Rashi in the parasha we read yesterday. Rashi discusses the question of Avraham Avinu having left his elderly father, Terach, to go to Israel based on God's commandment. And Rashi says that the Torah records the death of Terach many, many years before it actually took place. Because otherwise, an appearance would be given that for some reason Avraham had acted incorrectly. It's only an appearance, not the truth, because Avraham responded to an explicit command by God that can never be incorrect. But in people's minds, it might have been considered incorrect. And therefore, for this reason, the Torah records the death of Terach many years before it happened. So says Rashi. And the question is, let's discuss a hypothetical. In the absence of an explicit commandment by God, Abraham, go to the land of Israel. Let's say Abraham would be commanded to live in the land of Israel, as all of us are. And there would be a conflict between these two very powerful mitzvahs. One, the mitzvah to dwell in the land of Israel. Two, the mitzvah to honor one's father or mother. Which of these two has priority? This is a tough topic. It's easy to discuss, is this a mitzvah, is it not a mitzvah, is it prohibited, or is it not prohibited? What's much more difficult is priority, triage. They're both mitzvahs. It's a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel. It's a mitzvah to honor a father and mother. These are both undoubtedly positive commandments. The question then becomes, well, if you have a choice, one or the other, what do you do? Rashi does not address this. Rashi just says that, once again, the Torah recorded the death of Terach many years before it took place. So there shouldn't be a semblance of inappropriate behavior. Again, this is an explicit commandment by God. It can't be inappropriate. We're discussing what would have been in the absence of such a commandment. Would it be appropriate to leave a father to go to settle in the land of Israel? This is not a theoretical issue. Let me, by a show of hands, is there anybody in this room who has a child who's living in the land of Israel? Okay. Now I'll ask a question. Feel free not to raise your hand. If you want to, you can. Is there anyone here, amongst those who raised their hand earlier, who wasn't so happy when the child picked up, left the parents, and decided to settle in the land of Israel? No one is raising a hand. That means one of two things. Everyone was excited, ecstatic, thrilled, which I hope is the case. Or maybe you don't want to raise your hand because it may have some kind of appearance that maybe you shouldn't be objecting in any way to a child embarking on the heroic mitzvah of our times of settling in the land of Israel. Okay, we will not ask that question again. But what would be if an individual would in fact make a strenuous objection? Say, Sonny, or daughter, I object. And since there's an obligation upon you to obey a parent, presumably, to honor a parent, I insist that you remain here in North America. What should one do in such a case? May one settle in Israel over the objections of a parent? Or, it could be asked in a different way, your child moved to Israel, you're all excited, you're thrilled. After 6 months, you just cannot manage without him. Can't. You were so used to relying upon it for various things. Back. Please come back to North America because I can't manage without you. What does the halakha have to say about this question? As we shall see in the course of our analysis, and we are bounded by time, but we shall have ample time to see that this question goes far beyond the specifics of the question that goes to a number of other critical areas in analyzing the nature, the fundamental nature of this great mitzvah of honoring father and mother. As usual, the Talmudic text which speaks to this issue. Let me summarize it for you. The Talmud teaches us in Tractate Kiddushin. One wants to look it up later. It's in, to be found on the Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. The following story is told. There was a person named Rav Asi who had an elderly mother. She said to him, "Asi, please make me jewelry." A bit inappropriate for a woman of that age, but he made her jewelry. "Asi, please find a marriage partner for me." She obviously was a widow. So he responded, "We'll look." "Asi, find me a marriage partner who is as handsome as you are." Now, we're not discussing good looks necessarily. What we really mean is she is obviously a generation older than he is, and she's expecting her son to find a marriage partner a generation younger than herself. So he sees right away that she is not altogether with it. She has lost some of her equilibrium. And so he left her. He left her her Babylonian home, and he went to the land of Israel. That itself speaks volumes. Rashi adds, he made sure to put her in a good place, in good hands, not to abandon her, but he personally couldn't handle it. You're not going to leave this a feisty woman. He lands in Israel and he finds out she's following him. Oh, here's a woman too old to understand properly, too old to take care of herself, and she's embarking on the trek from Babylonia, that's Iraq. You know, that's what it's about, so let's put it in modern day Iraq, the land of Saddam Hussein. She's embarked on a trip from Iraq to Israel with no planes. She goes to Rabbi Yochanan, his Rebbe, his master, the greatest master of his time, and he asks him, "Ma'u lotet me'eret b'chutzlaret? May one leave the land of Israel to the diaspora?" She says, "No, not allowed." "Likras ima mahu? May I leave the land of Israel to greet my mother?" Here's the greatest sage of this day, Rabbi Yochanan, answering him in two words. "Eini yodea." I don't know. Itself, that's a little bit interesting. I don't know. He's the greatest rabbi in the world. He doesn't know. Okay. Rav Asi waited a bit and asked again. So Rabbi Yochanan responds as follows. "Asi, nisratseisa lotseis. You decided you want to leave. Hamakom yachzircha l'shalom. May God return you in peace." Approval. Says the Gemara, a sad ending to the story. He begins to travel towards Bavel, towards Iraq, to meet his mother, and he finds out that, unfortunately, her coffin is on the way. She had passed away on this trip to Israel. Omar, he says, here are the four final words of our discussion, the most important four words. "E yad'i lo nafki." Literally, "If I would have known, I would not have left." Simple meaning is, had I known that my mother was no longer alive, I would not have left the land of Israel. Simple reading. There's a major problem with this Talmudic statement. It's raised by one of the greatest commentaries in the Bible on the Talmud. His name is the Maharsha. It's printed in the back of every Masechta Kiddushin. And he raises the following question. On that same daf, Lamed Aleph and Mezeis and Kiddushin, the same page, towards the bottom, the Talmud teaches that one is required to honor a parent, not only in the parent's lifetime, but even after the parent passes away. Mechabdo b'chayev, mechabdo b'moso. Hence, the question is obvious. even if Rav Asi would have known that his mother had passed away, wouldn't he want to have left the land of Israel to accord her the respect of accompanying the coffin from wherever he met the funeral procession back to the land of Israel? Why was Rav Asi so regretful of the fact that he had left the Holy Land? He had, of course, intended to meet his mother while she was alive, but why was he so regretful when he found out that she had died? Nonetheless, he was fulfilling the mitzvah, the obligation, the commandment of according honor to his mother, even as her coffin was approaching the land of Israel. That's the Maharsha's question. He responds that going out to a funeral procession is not kvod hamet. That's his language. Is not giving honor to the dead. Now that's something which, at first glance anyway, is quite problematic. Not honoring the dead by going to a funeral? What is a funeral if not giving honor to the dead? That's a major problem. So before embarking on my analysis, I want to digress to give you an interpretation of the Talmud, which is not accepted normatively, but nonetheless is quite fascinating, and the back and forth will teach us some important lessons. I told you before that the four most important words of this Talmudic passage are the last four words. E yadi lo nafki, literally, had I known, I would not have left. And the Maharsha understood it, as we understand it, I would not have left the land of Israel to greet the funeral procession, had I known that it was a funeral procession instead of a live mother I was going to meet. However, the Rashash, another one of the classics, again printed in every Talmudic volume of Kiddushin, has a remarkable reinterpretation of those four words. Rav Asi was not saying, had I known that my mother died along the way, I would not have left Israel to go meet the funeral. Rather, who wants to fill in the blank? He means I would not have left Babel in the first place. Huh? I would not have left Babel in the first place, because if I would have realized that I left Babel, I left my mother in capable hands. She eluded him, obviously, as mothers are wont to do. She got away from those in charge of taking care of her, embarked on a dangerous trip and died on the way. So he now has remorse, guilt trip, that if he would not have left Babel originally, perhaps his mother still would have been alive. Wow. Talk about a guilt trip. This is how the Rashash suggests is the interpretation of this Talmudic passage. Wow. Wow. He says, this also saves the Ravid from the question raised against him by later authorities. What's the Ravid? Listen carefully. The Rambam rules, and this is how we accept normally in Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam's opinion. This is very, very important. This is part of the topic that was given. Quote, Mutter lazov es oviv imo im nitrifo datom. One may leave a father and mother, again, in capable hands, if their minds are no longer functioning. And, as a matter of fact, the Ran proves that the Rambam is correct from this story. Rav Asi left his aging mother because he saw that her mind wasn't working properly. So how can the Ravid argue with the Rambam when the Rambam is doing nothing more than quoting an explicit passage in the Talmud? Not only a passage, but a real-life story. Rav Asi left his aging mother because her mind was not working. So we see not only from the Talmud, from her real-life story, that it's permissible. Answers the Rashash, that's what Rav Asi did, but he later came to regret it. And therefore the Ravid, learning the Gemara, this with the last four words, the opposite way, he never would have left Babel, comes to the exact opposite conclusion. That we see from what happened at the end, that there's no substitute for a child. No matter what kind of other assistance there exists, based upon another individual or a facility, there's no substitute for a child. Hence, every child is required to take care of the parents no matter what. The opposite conclusion based on the opposite interpretation. Brilliant, however, as I said before, not normatively accepted. Because the Shulchan Aruch follows the Rambam, one may, in fact, leave an aging parent if the parent's mind is not working properly and the child can't handle it. So we're back to square one. Why did Rav Asi say, had he known that his mother had died along the way, he never would have left the land of Israel to greet the funeral? That's the question. If you have a question, though, you can ask me right now. You can raise your hand and ask a question. I don't mind. Yes.
Today, at least here in Toronto, we live in an age where patients need an advocate. And patients who are not fully there in their mind need an advocate more than any other patient. So how could it possibly be right to leave a parent in the hands of strangers without an advocate? If their mind is not fully functioning.
What a good question that was. Excellent question. Undoubtedly, Rav Asi left his mother in the hands of a capable advocate. But the mother outsmarted the capable advocate and snuck away. We know this happens. The truth is it happens to children too. May I speak for myself without going into details? I am a full-fledged member of what they call the sandwich generation. And I've had situations where a parent simply did not, everything was arranged properly, and just could be even in the child's house or in his own house, and just slips away. It can't happen. It can't happen. There's no such thing as a person who's awake 24/7. You could be asleep in the middle of the night and someone sneaks away. So, your question is, I agree with you. I agree with the premise of your question. Okay. Now I'll give you my answer. My answer requires a little bit of background, so please listen carefully to the fundamental principles I want to develop to reach a possible end. Question. Must an individual honor a parent who is categorized as a Rasha, as a wicked individual? We're not here today to discuss what a Rasha is. Just in your own minds, conjure up a parent who's a wicked person. Does this obligation exist or not? The Rambam, Maimonides, says, and quoted in Shulchan Aruch, yes. Yes, you're obligated to honor a parent, even if that parent is what we call a Rasha, someone who is a wicked person. So writes the Rambam. Later authorities, including the Tur, that are a very famous authority, say the Rambam is wrong. He's incorrect. Not only is he incorrect, but the Talmud rules explicitly contra to the Rambam. How so? There are two statements. The Talmud of Baba Kama has the following case. Someone is a usurer. He lends money with interest, with ribbons, with usury, which is considered to be a serious violation. Now, he passes away without repentance. The Talmud teaches that the child is not required to return certain objects to the borrower, which would somehow erase the blemish to some extent of the father's name, because the father is, quote, Eina Osa Masa Amcha, he's not performing the Torah in an appropriate fashion, and therefore the son is not required to honor the father in this manner. Explicit Talmudic statement that a father who is not conducting himself properly, the son is relieved of the responsibility of according honor to such a parent. That's question number one, raised by the Torah. A second question can be raised by a Talmudic story in Pesachta Pesachim. Interesting story involving biblical characters. Oh, slow. The famous character is Chizkiyahu HaMelech, one of the great, great kings. Some of you know from your reading of the Bible or the Talmud that at the end of the Davidic dynasty, there was a lot of ups and downs. Tzaddik and a Russia and a Tzaddik and a Russia and two generations of Russia and one of Tzaddik, back and forth. Well, Chizkiyahu was one such generation. He was a great Tzaddik and his father was a great Russia. When his father died, his father was the king. The king, normally entitled to a very ceremonious funeral. Says the Talmud, Girer Atmos Aviv, Al Mitna Shel Chavolim. He performed a rather unceremonious funeral for his father. And the rabbis in the Talmud approved of what he did. Question. Why? According to the Rambam, you'd be required to give honor to a father, even if he's wicked. So we're going to answer this question based upon two assumptions. And listen carefully to the two assumptions. Two assumptions. One, what is Kibud Av V'Em? Is Kibud Av V'Em the mitzvah to honor a parent, what we call Ben Adam LaMakom, a mitzvah between man and God? Or is it a mitzvah Ben Adam LaChaveiro, between man and his fellow man? Not so simple. It sounds simple, but it's not so simple. The Minchas Chinuch, for example, is not sure. What would be a practical difference? Well, we're still, within a month of Yom Kippur, am I correct? If I'm not mistaken, 4 weeks ago was Erev Yom Kippur. We're looking for things to do and people to ask forgiveness of. What happens if a person recognizes in Erev Yom Kippur that he has not given sufficient honor to a father or a mother during the past year? Must he beg forgiveness of his father or mother or not? You have to ask God for forgiveness, that's for sure. But must you ask forgiveness of your father and your mother? It depends. If the requirement to honor a father and mother is what we call Ben Adam LaMakom, it's a mitzvah between man and God, then it's comparable to someone who is remiss in keeping the Shabbos. You ask forgiveness of God and that's all. However, if the obligation to honor a parent is Ben Adam LaChavero, between man and fellow man, then one must ask forgiveness both of God and of the father or mother. And the Minchas Chinuch is not exactly sure which way it goes. That's question number one. We're going to assume, as I think the people were shaking their heads, that it is a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro. That's our intuition. Slight problem, if you know the Ten Commandments, it's on the, quote, wrong side. It's on the first side. The first five are l'makom, and the second five are l'chaveiro. But okay. It's the fifth, right? Transition, right? It's a little of both. Good. Okay. We'll assume that. Next question we're going to assume. We're going to discuss. Tell me, can there be an obligation of an Adam LaChavero to a Chaver, to a friend, to a co-religionist who is no longer alive? Think carefully. Can there be an obligation, repeat, of an Adam LaChavero to someone who's no longer amongst the living, someone who has died? Does that construct make halachic sense or not? Now, at first glance, you'll say, of course, the answer is yes. We do. What don't we do to honor those who came before? Many of us are involved sometimes in memorials for righteous individuals. Isn't that honoring someone who no longer is alive? The answer is yes. It is a measure of honor. But can there be, from a more rigorous halachic perspective, can there be an obligation towards someone who's no longer alive? Surprise you a little bit this time, I'm going to answer in the negative. That one cannot be obligated towards a fellow man unless he is a fellow man, alive at the time. What about a Tahara, very good. Excellent question. Who knows what we call, what's the Hebrew language, three-word phrase for a Tahara, for the performance of the mitzvah towards someone who passed away? Who knows what it is? Excellent. That's exactly what I was looking for. Chesed Shel Emes. What does Chesed Shel Emes mean literally? Literally, a kindness of truth. And the Mefarshim explained that it's in contrast to the typical mitzvah of chesed. The typical mitzvah of chesed, at least conceptually, to quote a non-Jewish scholar, is a social contract. Look carefully on the pasuk of Ki Biglal HaDavar HaZeh, the pasuk of Parshas Re'eh, which the commentaries compare to the word galgal. The wheel of fortune goes round and round. Today, you are helping someone because you are in the position to help and that person needs help. Tomorrow, you or your children or grandchildren could be the beneficiary of the help of that person or his children or grandchildren. That's how it goes around. It's a social contract. And therefore, from a purely rigorous perspective, the obligation of chesed, as opposed to chesed shel emes means it's truth. Truth means what the ultimate source of truth is, God. It's godly. God buried the dead, so we have to follow in his midos, in his ways. But from the rigorous halakhic perspective, chesed applies only when the two people, the beneficiary, as well as the person who is doing the chesed, are both alive. It is an issue, but I'm giving you the specific, rigorous halakhic answer to the question. This is not my own, it comes from earlier sources, that ben adam lachavero, in its formal sense, can only exist when both people are alive. Given these two assumptions, let's review again. They were both somewhat controversial, but I'm going to just choose one side of each of these two questions. Namely, number one, that kibud av aim has an element of ben adam lachavero, but number two, that ben adam lachavero can only exist when both people are alive, the adam and the chavero. Given these two assumptions, let's go back to the opinion of the Rambam. Let's review. What was the question? The Rambam said that one is required to honor a parent, even if the parent is a, quote, Russia. The problem is there are two Talmudic statements to the contrary. Two. The case of the person whose father died, but he had lent money with ribbis, with usury, with interest, and hadn't repented. And number two, the King Chizkiyahu, whose father had died, and he gave him an unceremonious funeral. But notice the common denominator about these two fathers. They were both dead. So now, they had two strikes against them, if I may use an expression from the United States, right? Two strikes means two negatives. Right? What were the two negatives? One, they were wicked people. And two, they were dead. Now, listen very carefully. If we're going to assume that there is a double mitzvah of honoring a parent, there's the kibbutz av as a beit adam lamakom and beit adam lachavero. But each one of them has a limitation. Let me explain. Beit adam lachavero does not apply, as we just said, to someone who is dead. But beit adam lamakom, of course, can. Now, however, let's make one more assumption, which will wrap everything up. Is there an obligation of an adam lamakom with respect to a parent who is, in the Rambam's words, a rasha? Yes or no? So we can suggest that although the ben adam lachavero mandate applies as a simple matter of repayment of a debt, a parent brings a child into this world. As such, the child has an obligation to repay. It's a lifelong obligation to repay. This applies irrespective of the nature of the parent, righteous or wicked. Doesn't matter. This parent, this father, this mother has brought the child into the world. Doesn't matter one bit as far as this core obligation. Of course, the better the parent is, the greater it is. No doubt about that. But even if the parent is not a good parent, he still is a biological parent, and this itself requires, kibud requires honor, ben adam lachavero. However, one could interpret the ben adam lamakom dimension of kibud av based on that very same Talmudic tract passage, 31b, Kiddushin Lamed Aleph Mevayis. I'm quoting it for the third time. Where the Gemara says, excuse me, it's in the previous daf, Laman Amadvei, Shlosha Shutzim Ba'adam, there are three partners to a man, his father, his mother, and God. Now, is anybody here a partner, maybe in business or something? Anyone have a business partners? Raise your hand, yes? When you entered into the partnership, did you check out very carefully to make sure that the other partner was someone you'd want to be a partner with? I sure hope so. Well, we could perhaps suggest that when God lists his partners, you know, sometimes in the law firm, there are a lot of partners. Before he puts your name down, on the top is God. He's the number one partner. He's the senior partner. Right? And then there are junior partners. Before being listed as a junior partner of God, you have to, pass the various checks that we have, before a partner is added to a firm. And an individual who is a rush, however we define that, does not pass those checks. As such, God will not take him on as a partner. As such, the ben adam lamakom dimension of kibud avim will not apply. So let's summarize. There are two dimensions of kibud avim. One, ben adam lachaveiro. This applies to any parent, righteous or wicked, but only as long as the parent is alive. No ben adam lachaver once a person dies. Then there's ben adam lamakom. This applies even after a person has passed away, but only to someone who could be considered a partner of God, someone who is a righteous person. So now let's just do the math and figure it out. If someone is privileged to have a parent who's righteous and alive, he or she is required to honor this parent on two scores. Benam lamakom, benam lachavera. If someone has a parent who is not righteous, but the parent is alive, according to the Rambam, one is obligated to honor that parent because of ben adam lachavero, repaying a debt. If one has a parent who was a very righteous individual but no longer is alive, once again there's an obligation. Everyone agrees to this. But this is only what we call ben adam lamakom. Once a person is dead, there's no longer ben lachavero. Ben adam lamakom. However, if a person has a parent who has two strikes, number one, the parent in his lifetime was a wicked parent who did not repent. And number two, presently, the parent is dead. Then, there's no ben adam lamakom, because the parent is not God's partner, having been deemed wicked. And two, there's no ben adam lachavero, because the parent is no longer alive. With this, we answer the Rambam's opinion. The two Talmudic statements that say that one must accord honor, one need not accord honor, to a wicked parent are both referring to a wicked parent who is dead, in which case the Rambam would concede that no obligation exists. However, if the parent is alive, the Rambam maintains, there is an obligation of Bein Adam Lachavero, between man and fellow man, because one has to repay a parent no matter what type of parent that parent is. This is our background. Now let's discuss the first question that we began the shiur with. Two mitzvahs competing, conflicting. One, dwelling in the land of Israel. Two, honoring a parent. What do you do? So, if you look carefully in the sources, those who want to look it up, and look in the Piskei Tshuva in Evan HaEzer Ayin Hei Vav, where the Mabit is quoted as saying that the mitzvah to dwell in Eretz Yisrael is so important that it overrides the mitzvah of kibud avim. That's it. Says so. And it's not surprising, he says. Everyone knows that honoring a parent cannot exist when it goes against the mitzvah. Many of us know the Talmudic statement, quoted by Rashi and Chumash, Ish imo v'aviv tiro v'shabsosai tishmoru, if your parents tell you to go against Shabbos, don't listen to them. So your parents are telling you not to live in Israel. So, what's the difference? However, in that same Pitzchei Tshuva, he says, not so simple. Not so simple. Maybe kibud avim is of greater significance than living in the land of Israel. And he quotes there our Talmudic text with which we began. The story of Rav Asi leaving his mother, going to Israel, and hesitating, should he or shouldn't he leave, to greet her as she approaches. A contemporary Godol, Rabbi Avadi Yosef, has a response about it in his Yichav Adas, more than one, and he says, no, living in the land of Israel is, again, more important than kibud avim. He proves it, because there are only a very few mitzvahs which the Gemara tells us are so important that you can leave Israel for. One of them is learning Torah, one of them is getting married, And one of them is earning a livelihood. That's it, three. Honoring father and mother is not one of those big three. Hence, better stay in the land of Israel, even if it means not fulfilling the mitzvah of kibud av va'em. Is there a distinction between leaving and not going? That is a potential distinction, but for today's purposes, we're going to assume it's the same, which very likely is. Let me therefore answer all the questions and get close to the end of my shiur. I want to leave time for your questions with the following hypothetical. A man is living in Toronto, and he is attempting to establish a business, and he needs money to help him with his business. He goes around to his friends and neighbors in shul. You know, would you like to invest in my business? I hope it'll be successful. And people, you know, lend him money, or invest money, lend money so he can go into business. The following week, he's at a very inspiring sermon with a local rabbi extolling the virtue of living in the land of Israel. Ah, such an important mitzvah. Let's say it's this week. This coming week is Lech Lecha. Go with Israel. See, the rabbi gets up and says it's such an important thing to make aliyah. And he gets bit with the aliyah bug, which is wonderful. He puts a for sale sign in his house. And he's going to Israel. So the person who just lent him $50,000 says, where are you going? Israel. Israel, that's nice. Why? Why? Did you hear the rabbi speak this past Shabbos? Yeah. Well, he says it's a tremendous mitzvah to go to Israel. So I'm going to Israel. Wait a minute. But you owe me $50,000. How are you going to pay me back on an Israeli salary? He says, well, that's your problem. The rabbi said to go to Israel. He said, well, let's go to the rabbi and ask him. Did he mean that you should go to Israel and stiff me $50,000. Rabbi Kelmer just walked in the nick of time. So what do you say, Rabbi? Huh? I agree with you, Rabbi Kelmer. You cannot go to Israel. And the question is, why not? Why not? He'll say, there are only three mitzvahs which keep you back from Israel. Married is already married. Torah, you can learn better Torah in Israel. And then Parnassah, there's not much Parnassah here either. So let him just go to Israel already. Here's the answer, I believe. These three mitzvahs, or three reasons, or the mitzvahs within the three reasons, that enable you to leave Israel, that's Ben Adam Lamoko. However, Ben Adam Lachavero, it's a whole different category. A person should not be a tzaddik to settle in the land of Israel on someone else's back by reneging on a debt of $50,000. May I submit to you that your debt to your parents is more than $50,000. It can never be repaid. Hence, I would like to argue against Rabbi Avadya Yosef and the other rabbis and suggest that perhaps an individual who is needed here in the diaspora to repay a debt, and it's a lifelong debt, to a parent is required to stay behind, not fulfill the mitzvah of living in the land of Israel, just as the person who owes the $50,000. That is my analogy. But now to the punchline. Which dimension? We said before, there are two dimensions in Kibud Av V'Aim. Ben Adam LaMakom and Ben Adam LaChavero. Which of the two dimensions is keeping this person back from settling in the land of Israel? Or preventing him from leaving the land of Israel? Which one is it? Ben Adam LaChavero. Now let's go back to our enigmatic Talmudic statement. Rav Asi was in Israel. His mother was coming from Bavel. He wanted to greet her and was ultimately given permission by Rabbi Yochanan to leave. But then he found out that his mother had died. And he responded, "Had I known she died, I wouldn't have left Israel." What does that mean? Why? Why not? Correct. Because once his mother had died, as strong as the obligation is to give honor, in a general sense, to the memory of a departed parent, as we said earlier, that cannot be considered Ben Adam Lachavero. That is Ben Adam Lamoko. And if from the Ben Adam Lamoko perspective, Rabbi Avad Yosef is correct, Kibbutz Av Eim is not one of the big three. Can't leave. Had she been alive, certainly yes, Ben Adam Lachavero. But once she passed on, was only Ben Adam Lamoko, he said, Iyadi Lo Nafke would not have left. This is how I understand this Talmudic passage. This being the case, we'll add a little bit of icing to the cake, and then I'll open the floor to questions. The icing is, what happened with Rabbi Yochanan? He said at first, I don't know, Eini Yodea. And then Rav Asi waits a little bit, comes back and asks a second time, and suddenly he answers him, go, what changed? So perhaps this is the answer. This is already a little bit of a stretch, but listen for a minute. Rav Yochanan didn't know, but he was the Gadol Hador, and he didn't know. He didn't know because he didn't know a fact. And the fact he didn't know is, why was Rav Asi leaving Israel to greet his mother? Was Rav Asi leaving, forgive the expression, but I'm going to say it anyway. Was Rav Asi leaving, as what we call in our place, frumkeit? He wanted to be this big tzaddik. I don't mean it in a pejorative. I'm just saying he wanted to be a excellent ben Adam Lamoko. He knew this is a big mitzvah kibbutz av, and therefore that's why he wanted to go. Or the Rav Asi wanted to leave Israel because of the interpersonal relationship, the ben Adam Lachavero. He couldn't answer the question because it depends on why he was leaving. If he was leaving ben Adam Lachavero, leave. If ben Adam Lamoko, then not. So Rav Yochanan was so smart, he said, I'll say I don't know and we'll see what happens. Because he figured, if it's a matter of, quote, religiosity, I don't know, so Rav Yochanan will go home. He's not going to go anywhere. He doesn't know. The master doesn't know. But if it's that interpersonal, it's that feeling of a want to repay a debt of gratitude, he'll be back. Sure enough, a few minutes later, he was back. When he came back, Rav Yochanan figured out, this is a Ben Adam Lachavero drive. That being the case, that Asi Nisrat Seisa Lotse, if you really want to go, because it's really an interpersonal kind of a thing, go with my blessing. That's my interpretation of that exchange between these two giants in Talmudic times. Let me just therefore now review, then I'll take any questions that you may have, because I'm told we have to end exactly on time. That was the one instruction I received from the rabbi. Okay, so let me give a 2-minute review and I'll leave you time if you have any questions. We began with the question of what takes priority, living in Israel or Kibbutz Av Eim. We then quoted a Talmudic passage in the Sefer Kiddushin by Rav Asi and his aging mother. According to the normative interpretation, as opposed to that of the Rashash, just to make an allusion, Rav Asi was given permission to leave Israel. Once he found his mother died along the way, he said, I would have left. And the question was, why not? There's honor to a parent, both while the parent is alive, as well as while the parent is no longer alive. We then had two questions. Is there a Ben Adam Lachavero component? And does that component exist after death? The answer to the first was yes, and to the second was no. With this, we would answer the Rambam's view with respect to a Rasha. There's an obligation while the parent is alive, but not, as the Talmud teaches us, when the parent dies. With this, we then went back to our original question about the two competing mitzvahs, conflicting mitzvahs, and we came to a conclusion, which is against many other authorities, that there is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, yes, but Kibbutz Av Eim during the lifetime of the parent is more important. It's prias chov, it's repaying a debt, it's a $50,000 analogy. However, once the parent had died, then living in Israel is more important. Hence, Rav Asi's original statement he would not have left had he known she died, but had she been alive, he was very happy to leave. And at the end, we said that Rav Yochanan didn't know, he wasn't sure what was driving Rav Asi to his request to leave the land of Israel. This is the formal presentation that I would like to leave with you, which I think if you study the relevant text that we quoted, you'll find at least a possibility. However, there are many additional questions. I will take yours in the audience if there are any. If there are none, I have a few more of my own. But first, whoever wants to ask a question, please raise your hand. If you go to the mic, it'll be even better. I'll be able to hear you better. Please, in any order that you wish. Yes. Oh, makes it even more loaded. The answer is that, as in many areas of Jewish law, it's a matter of significant dispute. Everyone agrees that there is a measure of respect accorded to a parent-in-law, no doubt about that. However, there's a very wide divergence of opinion. Is this merely a kind of respect for an elder, we'll call it a capital E, as opposed to someone else who's of similar age? Or does it really approximate the obligation of honoring a real parent? And there's no definitive ruling on that. Having said that, it's difficult to impose upon a child-in-law the level of honoring a parent-in-law which approximates the higher level of honoring a parent, since there is a very significant body of halakhic literature that maintains it's rather the more the reduced level of honoring an elder in general. But there really are two opinions in halakha. Sorry, I can't be more specific than that. Yes, sir. Go to the mic if you don't mind.
Can one make a distinction in that mitzvah is if there's a need or there's just a general desire of the parents not to want the child to go without anything specific? And I just don't want you to go security without, or does it have to be actually a need?
Okay. That's an excellent question. That's what I would have asked had you not asked it in the few remaining minutes. I hope to finish the question, and there's still enough time for another couple of questions. We'll see. It's like this. In general, one must distinguish between honoring parents in the literal sense, kibud av v'em, which the Gemara translates in a somewhat narrow way, helping to feed a parent, to clothe a parent, to offer service to a parent. That's kibud av v'em. And every parent has the right to request that of a child, although a parent would be wise to forego an onerous obligation on a child. In America today, I would say, most children, if their parents are healthy, are not very much involved in kibud av v'em on a regular basis. In many communities, the parents are not even living in the same, we'll call it neighborhood, or maybe even city, as the child. And we don't find parents protesting when the child moves from, I will say, Chicago to New York or vice versa. Well, let me say Toronto, New York, and vice versa. I don't find too much objection, too much acrimony. I mean, people like their kids next to them, but they understand. My son has a job in Toronto, or he has a job in New York, so he has to move to where he can find a parnos or something, or his wife's family is from there, and she has to be there for her family reasons. People are, generally speaking, fairly accommodating. It's that Israel bit. It's just far away, and it's always feel this, it's far away. Let's leave it at that. I don't want to say anything more than that. It's far away. You can't travel there in an hour. So it's far away, and it's hard for me to get there. Is that a reasonable request? That's the real question. Is that a reasonable request on the part of a parent to say to a child, listen, I don't need your physical help. Thank God, Mom and I can manage fine on our own. But we miss you. So therefore, come back and live in Chicago. We're in New York. We live in Chicago, so we can get there in an hour and a half on a plane or 2 hours instead of taking a 10-hour trip. Is that reasonable? If it is reasonable, then the child must obey it, not, in my opinion, as kibbutz, because there's not much going on, it's not serving too much tea, but what I consider to be morav. In my view, morav, reverence for a parent, includes obedience. But only obedience when the request is reasonable. Reasonable. Let me tell you a story. Sometimes recent stories are so amazing. As I was going to the airport today, my wife, I was driving, she was sitting next to me, and she called someone on the cell phone and left an urgent message last night and again today. This is what the message was about. A woman's getting married today over the objections of her parents. And a distinguished rabbi said that this woman is not acting in accordance with halacha and therefore told her friends, don't go to the wedding. And she said on a tape last night, only Rabbi Willig will decide for me whether I'm going or not going. I have to ask from here what Rabbi Willig has to say. Well, that was last night. By the time we got it today, she was waiting in the car going to the wedding. And I can't blame her. She had another rabbi who had said, no, the woman doesn't have to listen to her parents, and she may get married, her friends may go to the wedding. So, two great rabbis, I will not mention their names, of course, great rabbis, each one with a large following, disagreed as to whether the woman who's getting married, right now is probably married, had the right to do so halakhically over the objections of her parents. Now, there are more rights that one need not obey a parent in matters of shidduchim or getting married. That's the second opinion. But the first opinion maintains that's because it's an unreasonable request. The man wants to marry this woman, a woman marry that man. It's unreasonable. That's the rule, but there are exceptions to the rule. Sometimes the parents are being eminently reasonable in their request. That's a great judgment call which rabbis have to wrestle with. But who's rabbi? The child rabbi, not the parent rabbi. That's important to know. The child rabbi, it's the child shaila. So here again, if the parent has no, quote, need for the child, the parents are managing fine. But they want the children just to be near them. You know, they don't want to be in Israel. Chicago is the limit. What about L.A.? Yeah. So it becomes a little bit arbitrary. And there are planes today going back and forth. So therefore, my gut would be in the typical case, that it's a typical case, with obvious exceptions, it's not a reasonable request. And therefore, I would say that if the child really can move to Israel, may move to Israel in such a circumstance. The parent is sick, and it's hard to find someone to take care, and otherwise the child would be in the neighborhood. If the child's in Chicago, the father's in New York, and the child wants to move from Chicago to Tel Aviv, so the father goes, what are we going to Tel Aviv for? Say, well, look, I'm not helping you from Chicago either. Why can't I go to Tel Aviv? So again, it's not reasonable. But if the child is in Flatbush and the parent is in Flatbush, and that a child's moved from Flatbush to Bnei Brak, that's already a much different question. Maybe the child's really taking care of the parent. So every case has to be dealt with separately. And now I have, I think, no time left. Rabbi, am I right? 1 minute, so we'll take one more question. Please. Abusive parents? Okay.
How do you look at that?
Oh, I'll tell you how I look at it. I've been asked the question, unfortunately, too many times. An abusive parent is a parent that, when possible, and depending on the nature of the abuse, the child should run away from like from the fire. Literally. Run away. And these abuses, even in the so-called Orthodox communities, can be absolutely mind-boggling. Mind-boggling, to the extent of incest rape. Now, I had such a question. It's mind-boggling. I told the person who asked it, run away. She has to run away today, not now, the second. I try to follow up. I don't know what happens. I don't know what the person's name is. An intermediary asked me, run away. There's no such thing as honoring a parent who's wicked if the parent is being wicked to you, the child, right now. When the Maimonides, the Rambam, talks about honoring a wicked parent, and the parent is wicked in some other area of life. We had the cases where the person worshipped idols, the parents lent money with interest. It's nothing to do with the parent-child relationship. But if it's abusive with a capital A, with a terrible abuse, run away. Of course, you have to, again, ask a halakhic question, because maybe what you consider to be abuse is not abuse. What's the abuse? My father won't let me drive my car till 4 in the morning every Saturday night. He's an abusive parent. He's locked me up in jail. That's not funny. There are people who think that way. So the rabbi will say, I'm sorry, but that's not called abuse. But if there is a situation which rises to the level of abuse, which you have to be protected from, the halacha is clear. You run away, and the truth to tell, such a parent should be reported to the police. But that goes beyond the purview of this discussion. Thank you very much for your kind attention.